Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You can hear It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders on Sundays at 10 a.m. on 89.7. And if you've heard it, you've probably figured out that it's different. Sam Sanders talks about the news, yes, but with an eye on how politics intersects with pop culture. He tries to break down the current events and also understand how people are feeling about those events. Sam Sanders is in Columbus for a special event tonight on the Ohio State campus. For more information, visit the link at WOSU.org/allsides. He joins us now. Welcome to the show, Sam Sanders.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's so good to be here.
How did you get from politics in the 2016 presidential election to It's Been a Minute?
You know,
It
was one of those things where when I took the job covering the campaign, I was super excited to do it and be on the trail and be in that moment. But when I would do those periodic gut checks where you kind of envision where life takes you next, I never saw myself as a political reporter for the rest of my life, you know, and I just knew that. And so I guess probably about halfway through my time covering the election, I started to tell my bosses, hey, I just feel like once this is done, I'm going to need to do something else. And when you work in an organization as big as NPR, you have to tell 12 bosses the same thing 144 times before they believe you. So after my goodwill tour with the managers, me and my colleague Brent Bachman, who helped create the politics podcast that I hosted for NPR for a while, he convinced the network to let us try to make a new show. NPR was wanting to make new podcasts and radio content, and I was willing to be a guinea pig. So I really can't take too much credit for the show. It's really Brent's brainchild. We just spent several months holed up in the fifth floor of NPR's building in D.C. and tried stuff until we figured out what segments worked, what we wanted to do. And the big thrust of the show was basically understanding that we wanted to have a show about current events that was not just about the president. And a show that in an era of crazy, crazy news cycles reminded folks that it's okay to laugh and it's okay to have fun and it's okay to not always be focused on story A. So that's what we're trying to do with the show each week.
You did get some politics chops, though, and that has to help you just in figuring out what's up.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a certain rigor in covering politics that I think will serve any journalist well in whatever they do next. Whenever I would write a story about Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, you knew that there were hundreds of listeners and readers and tweeters ready to ding you and zing you for any small thing you got wrong. Yeah. So it just made you meticulous with the stuff that you were making. And I did this. So I covered politics after several years covering breaking news, where you're forced to just churn out content really fast. And I think being able to work with speed and with clarity and a real rigor on facts, it makes doing what we do now that much easier, because it'd be easy to say, all right, we're doing this fun, chatty talk show now. Let's do whatever we want. But the rules still matter. And I think that listeners are still coming to our show for NPR, which is a place that has the facts and has the news and tries to get it right. So, yeah, I for sure was a better journalist after covering the election.
There's a lot of conversation about how you feel about things, what you think of things. There's your opinion in it, and that's different too.
Yeah, you know, there are some of my opinions that I won't share. I'll never tell listeners which politician I like or don't like. Mm-hmm. I'll never endorse a candidate or a product. But I am totally okay with saying that thing this person in the news did this week, that feels dumb. Or that thing XYZ is saying, I don't think that's appropriate. And I think that that's okay. And I think that listeners now are totally okay with hosts like you and me being real people. And so there are things on the show that we share that aren't even just opinions, but they're just like tidbits of my life. So like we open the show each week with a song that I liked that week. And there's no other reason than I like the song and I want you guys to hear it too. Or my Aunt Betty does the intro for the show and listeners have come to know her periodically throughout the broadcast. And I want to share those pieces of me because I want our listeners to feel like we're in this together. And I am I'm no better or really different than they are. We like weird stuff. We do weird things. We're people with likes and habits, you know? Yeah.
I think how I started to distinguish between like that hard news and keeping my opinions to myself and that whole thing was when I was covering state government and politics and started looking at the processes. Mm-hmm. The processes aren't really human. Mm-hmm. They're sort of extra. Mm-hmm. And you can say, well, that process
it's just
is stupid.
Bad. Yeah.
And it's not blaming any person.
No, it's
and,
just and saying kinda, this was a bad move.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I approached it back in the day when I was both a State House reporter and I wrote a column. And
exactly.
It was a challenge, but it turned out there was plenty of fodder.
Plenty of fodder. And there's stuff today where you just got to call it what it is. Yeah. When I think about talking about Donald Trump's tweets, whether you like him or dislike him, I think it's totally fine to say, not a good tweet. Didn't accomplish what he wanted. I think back to his announcement of a ban on trans people in the military, an announcement through a tweet that had not been vetted by his staff or his legal team.
Not to mention the military.
Yeah, or the military that's still held up in court. It's totally fine to say that was a move that did not serve the president well, and it was handled poorly. It was handled poorly, and I don't think that that is a particularly liberal or conservative point of view. It's the truth. You know, when I think about the way that his comms team handled the Rob Porter scandal, you know, this was a senior level White House staffer who had been accused of domestically abusing two of his ex-wives.
Right.
They hemmed and hawed for days before they came out and said that domestic abuse is wrong. That's just a bad handling of it, you know?
Well, and he also said, and he's such a good guy and he's doing such great work and I hope this doesn't hurt his career before that.
Yeah. And it's like we can say that. And I think that journalists were doing some of the same things during the Obama era. Like a bad move is a bad move. And it is journalists' job, I think, to try to sometimes be the referee and the umpire. We're not so much rooting for a team, but we're calling the plays and saying that ball's in, that ball's out. And that's fine. Let's do that.
Sports analogies and journalism hand in hand, particularly politics, political journalism. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Sam Sanders, host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. It airs at 10 a.m. on Sundays on 89.7 NPR News. Sam Sanders will be leading a discussion with the CEO of BrewDog USA, Tanisha Robinson. It's about the new age of entrepreneurship. So if you want to learn more about that, it's tonight. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. An NPR piece about you and the show refers to your trademark curiosity and empathy. And I really get a feeling like you're a thing in your newsroom. Like you're the guy people sidle up to your desk and want to sit down and hang out with.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When we were putting the show together, Brent, my colleague, and I, we kind of thought about and talked about my typical day in the newsroom, and usually every 45 minutes or so, I got to get up and walk around. And when I get up and walk around, I want to go talk to somebody, and I like call them stop and chats. Get up, go to this person's desk, that person's desk. Hey, what's up? What you working on? How's it feeling? This, that. And before you know it, we end up having these pretty meaty conversations about the news and the world and current events that feel really loose and conversational. And that was a vibe that we wanted to bring to the show. And I like to do that. I like to just ask people questions and see what the hell they're going to say and not know where it's going to go, which kind of weirds out the production team sometimes because I'm the kind of guy who's like, we don't need a script. We don't need a roadmap. Let's just talk. But I think that hopefully that becomes a trademark of the show, just, you know, letting these conversations guide themselves and seeing where we end up and knowing that curious people having a conversation is usually always going to be good.
I like it that you have colleagues on with you.
Oh, yeah.
NPR colleagues.
Oh,
I like
yeah.
that idea.
I think they like it, too, because they can come into the booth with me and do a thing they might not get to do
exactly
during the week. We don't really do a lot of scripts. It's a really loose taping, and they can kind of let their hair down. You know, it's funny. We do this one part of the show kind of a third of the way through when we, like, have a return from a break or something.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to the next news topic, I ask my panelists a question about how they would react to a certain news topic. So we call it our yes or no return. So, for instance, last weekend, Barbara Streisand had been in the news because she cloned her dog.
Yes.
It's really strange.
It's really weird.
On a typical show, we would just say that's a strange thing. But on our yes or no question to return to the show, I asked my panelists, would you ever clone your dog? And why? And, like, with what circumstances? And just, like, letting the journalists be a part, really a part of the discussion. I enjoy that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mentioned in the billboard at the top of the hour that you might not have heard that you often do your work shoeless.
I do. I do. And it's funny. It's become like a weird superstition for me. I don't record with my shoes on. And I actually forgot to take my shoes off. And here's okay. So I'm doing it now. When I was working like on the campaign trail and days when I'd be in the office, I was just all about being as comfortable as I possibly could. And so I did two things. I started wearing the same outfit every day so I wouldn't be forced to think about what I was wearing. And I started taking off my shoes whenever I wanted to. And before you know it, it stuck. And then before you know it, I got so superstitious about it, I would never go into the studio unless my shoes were off because I thought it was my good luck charm. And so now I keep doing it, and now I just wear a lot of funky socks. And it's so funny. As I've kept doing this and people know that I do it, folks just send me socks.
Yeah,
they send
me
fun
socks. Y'all did. 89.7, I think.
Yeah,
it was,
and I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you interview, I can't remember who it was, but it was at PRPD, Public Radio.
Terry Gross,
that's right.
Yeah.
Last summer. And
yeah, yeah.
I think you did it shoeless.
I did it shoeless.
Yeah.
I did Dan Rather shoeless on stage in Brooklyn a few months ago. It's pretty obsessive now.
Well, there's so many cool socks, though.
There's so many cool socks.
If there were cool socks, I don't know. But it's like a thing.
Yeah. It's a thing.
It's a good thing. You ask your listeners for feedback on the show. Now, you and I both know you're going to get feedback whether you ask for it or not, right?
Oh,
But I think that when you ask for it, you're going to get a lot of positive feedback as well as the negative stuff that you know you're automatically going to get anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for us,
not positive, oh, you're so great, but positive, constructive.
Yeah, so positive, clarify, constructive. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the feedback that we get from listeners ends up in the show. So we close every show each week with a little segment that we call Best Thing All Week. And it's really simple. We ask our listeners to record the sound of their own voices telling us the best parts of their week. And then we play it. And I react to it, and it's fun, and we have everything. Births, anniversaries, vacations, promotions, graduations, first jobs. We had a proposal on the show a few weeks ago. She said yes. But the listeners are a part of the show, and we get letters all the time about things that work and don't work for the show, and it is still a work in progress, and things are changing, and we want to make sure that our listeners are a part of making the show ultimately what it should be. We aren't done yet, for sure. You know, we aren't done yet making this show and making it what it will be.
I can't imagine it's not always going to be a work in progress.
But then I'll get bored.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've fixed everything, then, or however you want to put it, yeah, then it's yuck, boring.
I mean,
predictable.
Yeah, And this is a struggle, right? Like, how do you keep a thing that is set exciting? We're trying to find ways to do it. It's still very exciting right now. And we're still actually, every week we have big conversations about, will this segment live or die or stay in the show long term? We don't know yet. Like we're still very much in that phase. But there are some things that we know we're going to stick around forever. They just work so well. So that segment at the end of the show, The Best Things All Week, it stays. We also have a segment where we call a listener somewhere around the world and talk about the news in their neck of the woods. We call it Long Distance. That stays. So we're starting to figure out that, honestly, the best parts of our show are when we just talk to real people.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. My guest is Sam Sanders. He is the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. He is going to be leading a discussion tonight with CEO of BrewDog USA, Tanisha Robinson, and president of Pearl Interactive Network, Mary Korn, on the new age of entrepreneurship. For more information on that, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment for Sam Sanders right now, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Sam Sanders. He's familiar to many 89.7 listeners as one of the first co-hosts of the NPR Politics podcast. He now hosts a new talk show. It's called It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders. The show airs Sundays at 10 a.m. on 89.7 and covers the intersection of politics and pop culture. That's a very simplistic description of the show. We've been talking about it. Sam Sanders is in Columbus for a special event tonight on the Ohio State campus. For more information, check out the link at WOSU.org/allsides. He's still with us right now. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. How did you come up with the name of the show?
You know, it's a funny story. The name was the hardest part. We started experimenting with show ideas and segment ideas pretty much the week after the inauguration. We did a bunch of pilot testing in our app, NPR One, that NPR makes. Mm-hmm. It's a streaming app. And we had the show pretty much set by the end of the spring. We did not have a name. We went back and forth for literally months on the name. Couldn't get anything that worked for us, for our managers, and for legal. And so I was at a friend's.
And for legal.
Let me tell you, legal will slap it down real quick. And sidebar, all the good names are taken.
Yeah.
All of them. So it's funny. I was at a friend's wedding in California in May or June. And Brent, my producer, happened to be there as well. It was a mutual friend. So I'm there. Brent's there. His girlfriend's there. A bunch of work friends are there. And the sister of the groom who officiated the wedding, she had been listening to all of our pilots for the show at NPR One. And she liked them and she had ideas. And we're talking at the reception. And she's like, how's it going? The show's going to launch soon. How are you feeling? And we're like, we don't have a name yet. And so she said, well, what names are you thinking of? And like, what do you want? And we said, we want a name that tells listeners to join us for a conversation, catch up with us on the week of news and everything else. We want it to feel of the moment, loose, not too stiff. And so she sat there with a glass of wine for a few seconds. And then she goes, you know, what the kids say when they want to like catch up with someone is they say, it's been a minute. Let's catch up. You could call the show It's Been a Minute. And we're like, Then I sat with it. And then about two glasses of wine later, I said, that's it. So it is not at all my name. It was a gift from someone else.
But it felt good.
It felt so good.
Right,
and you just knew. It felt good off the bat.
We spent days working on the name for this show.
Really?
And I never was really thrilled with it because I knew, just as a trained journalist, that when you say all sides, you're never going to have all sides.
Possible.
So then we have a description. It's over the course of time. And that kind of a thing. But sure enough, I mean, every once in a while I get a caller or an emailer saying, I can't believe you call yourself.
Uh-huh. You didn't have all the sides.
I know it. But I guess it had a good sound to it, so
yeah.
we went with that. And you're
it.
Right, all the good names are taken.
A
lot of times, I get people say, I just love your show, All Things with Ann Fisher, and they're all things considered.
Oh yeah. So for a second, because we were going everywhere looking for names, and I wanted to call the show at one point Conversate, because Conversate's not a real word, but it is a real word.
Mm-hmm.
It is the wrong way to say converse, but so many folks say it that now even dictionaries say, well, it's a word. And I thought it would be a little cheeky and kind of an in-your-face to linguistic purists
yeah.
that sometimes listen to public radio. That name was taken, so couldn't do it.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think attracts younger listeners to your show?
Oh, gosh. I think that me and the team, we are plugged in to the culture. You know, we're internet first, we're mm-hmm. social media first, and I think that I consume the news the way that my peer group and younger consumes the news, which is just different than the way that our parents did. And I think the biggest thing that I've noticed with my generation is young and younger is that there are no dividing lines. Like when you think of a newspaper and there's the A section and mm-hmm. then there's biz and then there's art and then there's sports, We don't consume news like that anymore. It's a steady stream and all of it's there together. And so we're just ready and willing to connect the dots more than ever before. And also in that same regard, there is no high culture and no low culture. There's just the culture. I think that there was a time in public radio specifically where certain things you just didn't talk about because it was beneath us. No, if it is a topic of discussion and we can say something smart about it, let's do it. So we have no problem playing in the high and the low and seeing all of these things as connected. I'd say that's the biggest difference, at least in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think that public media has changed a lot in that regard, as far as that high and low issue goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's awkward, but you can really tell that they're
trying.
They're working at it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I even think about, like, NPR's coverage of music. Like, we have a dedicated section about hip-hop now. And we have a writer at NPR Music who writes about rap and hip-hop, Rodney Carmichael, who was phenomenal. Check out his work. But that wouldn't have been NPR 10 years ago. I mean, there was a time in NPR's life where, like, it felt or sounded as if the only music that we covered was bluegrass. And I'm fine with bluegrass, but it is not the music that is the cultural leader in the nation, you know? And I think it's smart for NPR and public radio to say, we got to cover this world as it is. And right now, the language of the culture is hip hop, you know, like the language of the culture is internet. Like we should be there.
Another thing is television. It didn't cover television well. And, you know, the world is television.
The world
now.
Watches TV, you know? And let's talk about it, you know? I agree.
Your producer, Brent Bachman, said that listeners love that diversity of topics, the mix of the high and low that you referred to, and the positive energy, which is really obvious. How do you check yourself in those categories? How do you check yourself, say, on just diversity of topics?
I think the biggest thing for me is to have a news consumption regimen. So because the Friday show specifically, you're trying to hit so much, like every day I have to wake up just consuming content. So usually when I wake up, start the coffee, I start playing one or two daily news podcasts, start my day with Up First from my colleagues at NPR. I usually listen to The Daily from those other folks at The New York Times. It's a really good show. And then I'll go through NPR One and I'll have Morning Edition playing. But I make myself sit down every day now before I get to work with a physical newspaper, a thing I never used to do, and I make myself read at least three or four stories from the ASEG, if not more. And usually when I'm doing that, I'm taking notes just to have for me throughout the week. And so by the time I get to the office, I kind of know what's going on. And then it's figuring out what I'm working on that day, what I got to read up on. And then you enter the scroll of social media. But I think it is really important for me to just kind of walk into every day knowing that I've spent at least a good hour consuming what's going on. Because it would be really easy for us to say, well, if we're only talking about these three topics in the show this week, just think about that. But I want to be able to take the conversation wherever it's going. And yeah, so it's you study every day. You know this. I mean, you just study every day. And I think that's helpful. I also think a really good check for us is just monitoring what our listeners are checking out. They write us all the time. I see them on social media. We communicate. And if they care about it, we should care about it too. You know, I don't want to be the show that tries to pretend it's the voice of God and tells you what you should care about. If you care about it, I care about it too, and let's talk about it smartly and go there.
The reading the newspaper every day.
It's a new thing for me because for years I didn't like to do it.
You know, grew up on newspapers and paper in general, Time Magazine, Newsweek, you know, all that stuff was regular things that I grew up with. And of course, I get the newspaper now. And it does make you think a little differently when things are organized that way.
Yes.
And I think that even when I take on the stream and the flow of information, whether it's with podcasts or Twitter or whatever it might be, because I follow lots of news organizations on Twitter, you know, I have those categories in my mind. And I'm organizing things that way. Now, that was what I was trained to do as a trained journalist and all that kind of junk. But I do encourage my people to read the physical newspaper. Well, it's different.
And it's different. And you know what I notice? Huh. If I'm reading stuff on my phone and I see an article on Facebook or Twitter, if it's on my phone, I almost never finish the article. Because before you know it, there's something else to click on.
Yep.
You got a text. You got a push notification. And then you're off somewhere
else. There's a BuzzFeed quiz.
Exactly. Or like you want to Google something that you saw in the article. But when I read a physical newspaper and it's just me and the paper and the coffee, I finish the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's miraculous. I finish the thing. And then I finish another story. It's a thing that you just can't do on your phone.
That's why for my folders and stuff, I have them print things out.
Same.
I know it seems really archaic.
No, I got to do it.
But I'll sit down and I'll read it and I'll put little tabs on things and I'll underline and that kind of stuff. And my puppy doesn't bother me as much when I'm reading paper as she does when I'm reading
my phone.
What
kind of dog do you have?
A Labradoodle. She's
I want you to pull up a picture as we keep talking.
I will pull up a picture.
I have a pit bull terrier named Zora Neale Hurston. She's the best dog. So you know, I just moved back to L.A. from D.C.
And
we drove, me and Zora.
Oh, you just moved back to L.A.?
Oh, yeah. I used to live there. I went to D.C. to go cover the election. I was ready to get back.
Yeah.
But I was going to drive because I wanted to take my car back and take the dog. And all my friends were like, well, we'll drive with you. We'll ride with you. I said, all I need is Zora. Zora's all I need. And she was the best traveling buddy. We would get out and walk and run every like 4 hours or so.
Yeah.
And then she'd just sleep.
She'd get out, yeah.
She just slept. Yeah, that's great. Dogs are better than people.
Ours is a little bit of a baby. She doesn't like to ride in a car. She's in puppy class right now.
How old is she?
Just 6 months.
Oh, that's a hard age.
She's killing us sometimes. But, you know, 80% of the time she's adorbs.
Puppies are just weird. Mine, when she was a puppy, she would chew the baseboards of the house.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's the craziest thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They outgrow it.
I'll tell you what, we have so many chew sticks laying all over the floor. It's like Legos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're stepping on them all the time, but they're everywhere. That dog has no excuse.
Yeah.
She has plenty to chew on. So 614-292-8513 is the number to call. If you want to talk with Sam Sanders, if you're sick of hearing me, you can join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. How do you find the nuggets outside of the debate over gun violence and tariffs to hone in on? How do you figure out what you think people are going to want to talk about?
I think for us right now, I'm trying to find patterns and trends, not just trying to cover the news of the day. So take, for instance, all of this tariff business. Donald Trump announced last week that he was going to bring out these pretty massive, up to 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum imports.
To everybody.
And he said the rules would come out at some point in the future. They haven't yet. There's still questions about whether allies to the U.S., like Canada, will be exempt. There's big questions about whether or not it will hurt American corporations and American jobs. And it was really easy once Trump made this announcement to say, oh, my God, a tariff trade war. It's going to be crazy, crazy, crazy for America. But I think I really wanted to step back, and we didn't speak too much about it in last week's show, because the pattern that I've seen with Donald Trump and all these big announcements is that sometimes there's no follow through and sometimes it doesn't happen. And I think the better conversation to have around whatever Trump's going to do with tariffs is not just, oh, my God, trade war, everything's going to be crazy, but how does this announcement fit into his broader pattern of policy announcements? What should we expect to actually happen? And when it does happen, what does that mean? And when you can do that, you start to see the forest and not just the tree. And when I think about the forest of Donald Trump's policy announcements, some of them go nowhere. I think about NAFTA on the trail. He announced several times that he wanted to take America out of NAFTA. This is a North American Free Trade Agreement. He could do it with the stroke of a pen himself, right? No need to go through Congress. He can
do it
himself.
That's one of the powers the presidency has.
Yeah, and he just hasn't done it yet. So I think with everything that he says, we got to wait and see what he does. And coverage that is only hinged and only looking at what he says is incomplete, you know? And so I think for us trying to find those patterns, that is better.
One pattern I've noticed with that kind of thing is when he'll say, I love chaos.
Yeah.
When someone will be critical of the way he does things and how it's throwing people into this state of chaos, depending on you know,
and he actually
where
does.
Your interests lie. And he's very happy with
he
that.
Does.
And that's always a signal to me that, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah. And so like
he says, I love chaos.
Yeah. And that should also be a reminder to consumers of the news that like what you think is a bad story about Donald Trump, he might not think of it that way. There are all these New York Times and Washington Post exposés about how the White House is just crazy. That's his MO, and he's cool with that. I followed him on the trail a little bit. So when I first began to cover the campaign, I covered Bernie Sanders extensively for months.
Uh-huh.
Once he got out, I bounced around between Trump and Hillary and the other ones. But when I would follow Donald Trump, it was chaotic. And that's just the way he liked it. I'll remember, so I went with him. He went to Detroit a few months before the election. For like black outreach, and he went to a black church. And but the whole time, usually when you're traveling with a candidate, as you know, the advance team has a schedule to the minute, and you know where you're going, and you know what you're doing.
You shuffled
and
along,
that's it.
And, yeah.
With every stop on Donald Trump's tour around the country, no one knew where they were going next. So it was this Sunday morning. I'm with Donald Trump's team at a black church. He's doing this appearance. We don't know when he's going to get on the stage. We don't know when he's going to talk. We don't know when and where we're going next. We actually were told to go back to the press bus while he was still giving a speech at the church. And there had been rumors that day that Donald Trump was going to go to Ben Carson's childhood home outside of Detroit. No one knew if it was going to happen or not. Secret Service didn't know. Advance team couldn't tell us. We end up going. We finally get there. The woman that lives in what used to be Ben Carson's childhood home says, I had no idea they were coming. He likes that. And so from what I saw on the campaign trail, Donald Trump is the kind of leader who wants even his closest staff to be surprised and waiting for his every next move. And that's just the way he is. And so we should stop like seeing these stories about how no one knows what's going on and it's crazy, it's crazy, crazy. It's what he wants. It's what he wants. That's how he works.
My guest is Sam Sanders, host of NPR's It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Sam Sanders. He's familiar to many 89.7 listeners as one of the first co-hosts of the NPR Politics podcast. He now hosts a new talk show called It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders. The show airs Sundays at 10 a.m. on 89.7, and it covers all the different intersections of politics and pop culture, you name it. They pretty much cover it. Sam Sanders is in Columbus for a special event tonight on the Ohio State campus. He'll be leading a discussion with the CEO of BrewDog USA, Tanisha Robinson, and the president of Pearl Interactive Network, Mary Korn, on the new age of entrepreneurship. So check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides for more on that. What do you think about seasonal topics that come up? Do you ever think about, well, it's spring or it's fall or it's winter or it's holidays or that kind of a thing?
Mm.
And when you talk about what are people talking about?
Yeah.
Like the weather. People are always talking about the weather.
I actually love talking about the weather.
I actually love having a meteorologist on every once in a while to just talk about the weather.
Yeah.
But there still has to be something of a peg.
There does. I mean, like, I think talking about weather gets a bad rap, for one. Like, it is a really great and easy way to connect with a stranger. We all experience the weather. go for it. Do it. We have yet to have a chat about the weather on our show, but now that you say it, I think we should.
But the nor'easter was...
I had just left D.C. Oh. And I've missed it. Oh, my goodness. But I heard horror stories.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad.
It's crazy. Well, and then you think it's like, all right, well, I'm escaping that bad weather on the East Coast. But then you go to the West Coast, there's mudslides and droughts
and wildfires. Wildfire season starting up again.
Yeah, it's something. And there's all these studies and reports that seem to indicate the effects of climate change will mean more of that crazy stuff. I saw something the other day that said the reason that we are experiencing more turbulence in airplane flights is because of climate change. I'm like, oh my God, what is it? Like, all of it is just like...
That would make sense, though.
I don't know. Some days it just feels like the earth is trying to, like, evict us.
Yeah.
Get out. Get out. Yeah. And you have to think about it, though. We are going to have a weather show. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, if there's a big volcano, I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I think about, why can't we just get it over with, like, day after tomorrow and just, like, we're going to go through this for a long time as it changes. It's not going to be over the course of a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to kind of figure out, when do you talk about it and why and what and that kind of a thing.
We had a few fun callers to the show. What was the last, like, crazy eclipse where, like, everyone could see it along?
Yeah, the solar eclipse over the summer. Yeah, went to it.
Yeah. We had one
went
woman.
Went to it.
Exactly. We had one woman who was somewhere in Oregon, and she was, like, right along the path.
Yeah.
And she was like, I got to get out of town because so many tourists are coming in here to be here to see the path of the thing. It was like a public nuisance for her.
Oh, yeah. We went down to Tennessee. And that was great.
Yeah.
Was fabulous. We were with great friends and we had a blast and it was amazing to see it. And then we hopped in our car and it took us like 5 hours to get down there and we thought, oh, it'll take us 7 or 8 hours to get home. It took us 15 hours. We didn't stop for 7 hours.
Oh my goodness.
And it
That's
was really interesting when we stopped because we had to.
Yeah.
Certainly wasn't for gas.
Uh-huh.
Because we'd only gone 250 miles in 7 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
And, but it was everybody's lined up at the bathrooms, and they're all in the same situation. And the only thing, we didn't have a pet, nor did we have children. So
it's funny, though, just talking about the weather now. I think what is eternally refreshing about talking about the weather is that it is one thing that we all experience together, and it is unifying in this era where there seems to be the loss of a monoculture. Like, I can talk about the weather with anybody. That's a good thing. Talk about the weather more.
Yeah, the loss of a monoculture.
Yeah.
Good, bad?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I was just looking today. The ratings for the Oscars were out.
Yeah.
A little over 26 million viewers.
Down 23%.
Yeah, that's not a lot. And there used to be a time where it felt like everyone watched the premiere of the same Michael Jackson video, or everyone tried to figure out who shot JR. And I think that time is over. Maybe it's not, but it feels like it's not. And it's even harder than ever, not just to, like, fix America's gaze all on one thing, but also to, like, almost find a universal truth sometimes. Because we're all over the map and we consume media so differently and consume just different media.
I think that's why I still like going to movies.
Yeah.
Out at the theaters.
Yeah.
Because you're with a group.
Yes.
And
you're doing it together.
You're doing it together. And I remember we went to see silent films down at the Ohio Theater and they would have an organist play along with them and they were really cool.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a great experience to just be an experience and laugh and... I don't know what it was. It was like a group thing.
I totally get it. I totally get it. Have you seen Black Panther?
Oh, heck yeah.
It's real good. We had a chat actually on the show.
I listened to it.
We had NPR's resident comic book expert, Glenn Weldon, talking with Evan Narcisse, who's actually writing some of the new Marvel Black Panther
comics. Yeah, nice guy. Yeah.
He was a great guy. It was a good chat. And, you know, it's funny, like, we have the radio show that's an hour long, but that hour of radio is comprised of two podcast episodes. We have a Tuesday podcast episode and a Friday podcast episode. My secret favorite are the Tuesday episodes. These are just kind of long conversations. I just love getting to dig really deep with folks on some big ideas, you know? It's super fun. And we've had a wide range. We've had two members of Congress, a lot of authors, a lot of musicians. And we let these conversations breathe. They're usually about like 30 or 45 minutes, which I super enjoy.
Do you edit them a lot?
Oh, yeah, we edit them a lot. So most of the time we ask our guests for those Tuesday conversations to give us at least an hour or 90 minutes. Usually we talk for more than an hour. What you're going to hear is significantly shorter. We just give you the good stuff.
It's good editing, though. Well, it doesn't feel truncated.
Brent Bachman is the master.
It's well done.
And our colleague Anjali Sastry, who works on the show as well. It's so much of the praise goes to the folks that you don't hear.
What do you think of Black Panther?
I really liked it.
I did too.
I think that there were, I know it's cliche to even say now, but it matters when you see different people doing different things on the screen. You know, there were these long, extended action scenes where two black women, dark-skinned black women, are the good guys killing the bad guys. I've never seen that. It means something. And I've heard so many stories of kids seeing this movie and just having their minds blown because people that look like them are the superheroes. It matters. I mean, I do have a little trepidation about tying black empowerment so closely to something as corporate as Marvel and Disney.
Yeah, I heard that on your but that's the world
that's
in which
the world.
We live.
This is a corporate world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wakanda isn't real.
Yeah.
But Disney is.
Exactly. And they are getting our money.
But a movie like that's very expensive to make.
Oh yeah, it is. Oh yeah, it is.
I just think of all the thought that went into it, and I had a show on it as well.
Yeah,
and it was the world was so rich.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the richest Marvel universes I've ever seen.
Totally,
they haven't gone to that much trouble for anything. I mean, even Wonder Woman was a little island.
Exactly. This was like a whole world
thing, man. And
and then,
all different kinds of people.
Exactly. And then throughout the movie, you keep saying, "Oh my God, they have like every black actor of note in this movie."
Yes.
They're like, oh, Forrest Whitaker.
Well,
okay. Everyone's in the movie.
Drop the mic.
Exactly.
And she's the queen.
Of course she's the queen. No, it was super cool.
I know Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
It was like everywhere. Yeah. They were all, and better, so many people I wasn't that familiar with that now I am.
Yeah, totally.
It broadens everybody's world, but it's just changed. And there's going to be more.
Oh, you know there's going to be more.
But once there's Wakanda, that changes everything with the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's
not just one person. It's a whole society.
It's a whole society and the whole
that's
world.
That's elite and superior.
And a society that has a history entirely unlike the rest of the world. It'll be interesting.
Yes.
I'll be watching.
Yeah, what I was going to say I think about it like Lord of the Rings and how they made those movies so rich and just right down to the language and the hieroglyphics and the does every little thing was designed with a whole entire mythological culture in mind. And and they saw it through that lens so thoroughly.
Exactly. I just hope they don't do to Black Panther what happened by the end of Lord of the Rings. That last movie when it's like 7 hours long.
Yeah.
You're like, end it. I get it. End
those
it.
Those battle scenes were.
Yeah, well, because there was one that felt like it had four or five different endings. And it was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
The good guys won. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I swear I wanted my kid to see the shows, but I couldn't have him see all the orcs and everybody battling.
Oh,
so I keep having to fast forward through the battle scenes.
And
that took some time. They were serious.
Oh, yeah.
Joanne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joanne.
I just want to tell Sam that I particularly enjoy the last part of his show where people call in and say the best thing that happened to me this week.
Oh, thank you.
That is just so uplifting and refreshing. And, you know, with all the stuff we're hearing about the world, it just really, it's just wonderful. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much for your call and for listening. It's funny how that came to be. So for years now on my Facebook page, I'll post, "Happy Friday, what's the best thing that happened to you all week? Brag." And my friends online will just post whatever all the time. It wasn't my idea. I saw other friends of mine doing this. And when we were having brainstorming sessions for the show, a colleague said, "Well, why don't you do that thing on Facebook just on the radio?" It wasn't even my idea to do it, but I really do like it. And I think it's good for us to remind ourselves that even though the news seems crazy, there is still good in the world. And it's totally okay and appropriate and necessary to celebrate that good. And we shouldn't feel guilty about it.
How do you pick who gets to go on?
It's all the production team. So
okay.
Anjali and Brent pour through all the calls every week, and I actually don't hear them until I'm in the studio. So when you hear me react to it, it's my first reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all them, because we get too many to play.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah. How many do you get?
I'll have to ask.
I don't want to discourage anybody from doing it either.
Because we listen to them all.
You never know. Yeah, someone's listening to all of them.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's
pretty
cool.
And we like to hear them. So keep sending them in.
Joanne, thanks a lot for that call. How do you deal with sad things, though? I mean, I know you want the high and the low and the upbeat and the how people feel about things. But just, you know, that man who committed suicide in front of the White House yesterday, I think it was. It's just so sad. And why? I don't want to lose that. I still want to ask why. I'm as curious in some ways about that as I am about why that kid went and killed all those people in Florida.
Yeah. I think for me as an interviewer, I've gotten to be okay with just letting people cry. There have been some episodes, the Tuesday episodes, where the person I'm talking to gets emotional. And I think years ago I would try to console that person or say, it's okay, you don't have to cry. Here's a tissue. Let them cry. Get it out. Get it out, you know? And everyone needs that kind of catharsis at some point. And it's important to let our listeners and our guests on the show do that. And I even think in the ways that we cover the news, like the Parkland shooting, like, you know, the person who tried to kill themselves in front of the White House, we have to let people process it in their own way. Grief is grief. It hits us all differently. And what I want to do with the show is say, whatever emotion you're feeling right now, it's valid. You get to feel that way. We can argue about the facts and who's right and who's wrong. But if you feel a certain emotion, you get to feel it. On my show, in the world, cry. It's cool. So, don't be afraid of the tears.
And so you're not afraid of those difficult subjects?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we had a really interesting chat a few weeks ago. I talked with an author who wrote a book all about love and marriage in India. And she talked about how over the course of writing her book, she came to some harsh realizations about herself and how she views marriage. And then before you know it, I'm talking to her about how I view relationships. And it was really in the weeds and deep. And we were talking about our fears about love and how we think we might not be cut out for some of these things. And I shared some stuff about myself that I probably wouldn't have years ago. But it's like, you know what? Put it out there. Mm-hmm. I think that the era of people not being their truest selves or not showing you their cards, that's over, you know?
The all era of who I am too, is pretty much TMI, too much information.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it's – we are – like, nothing that I'm going through is vastly different than what you're going through. So why can't I talk about it? I think in our minds we conjure up that our problems, that our difficulties, that our the things that exasperate us are somehow bigger or worse or more shameful than someone else's. There is nothing new under the sun. Mm-hmm. And anything that I'm dealing with, a listener is dealing with it too. So why not talk about it? Put it out there.
Probably a lot of listeners.
Yeah.
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 Well, Sam Sanders, I want to wish you all the best.
The hour's already up. Oh, my goodness. It flew by. This is so much fun.
Sam Sanders, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate taking the time.
Thanks for having me. This was a treat.
Sam Sanders will be leading a discussion with the CEO of BrewDog USA, Tanisha Robinson, superperson, and president of Pearl Interactive Network, Mary Korn, on the new age of entrepreneurship. That's tonight. Check out the link at WOSU.org/allsides for more information about that. Sam Sanders, if you're just tuning in, he's the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders, and you can hear him at 10 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News every Sunday. Thanks a lot for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.